just like, what is Kokelet at the moment?
Let's pray. Shkwembu tatana usayina Yesu Kristu yechansa kuba uyihlanganisele namhlanje imisho ekanhlengeletani leyo chansa uhlayiseka yade amahle nanhlengeletani leyo ephuna shikwembu ngevita ra Yesu Kristu wa Nazareta. Amen.
Realibuha. Any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I've received an apology from Honorable Mashabela from the EFF, as well as Honorable, what's her name? Sukas. That might be joining us a bit late.
Good morning, members. I have an apology of Honorable Shabalala and Honorable Mogatseka.
Okay, and there's one also from the minister. She's in KZN with the district directors or whatever. Did you?
Sorry, Honorable Chair, Honorable members, Deputy Minister as well. They're in the same meeting. Thank you.
Those are the apologies. On our agenda, Honorable Members, we've got the briefing on the examination readiness. And then I just want to bring to the attention of members that we've got a letter from the House Chair that they are asking, or they are asking that for the 17th, which is next week on Thursday, we must know that there is a caucus at 10, there is a caucus at 10, and then there will be a plenary at 2, which means we won't be able to have a meeting, and we are supposed to have a presentation on inclusive education. So which means then we won't have our meeting on Thursday next week because of that. Then we rather see where do we squeeze in that presentation. So I'm just bringing it to your attention so that we are aware that that's the program for Thursday next week. DG, all yours.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, thank you very much. Chair, on a lighter note, we've been in Cape Town since Monday, some of us, so if there's a lawsuit from our children, we'll send it to the committee because we are insolvent. We won't be able to deal with that lawsuit. It's just on a lighter note. Okay. Chair, today we're presenting a progress report on the state of readiness for 2019, National Senior Certificate Examinations. The progress report will cover the following areas: purpose, introduction, size and shape of the sector, the assessment of the state of readiness, and the two main parts, which is learner readiness and the system readiness. Learner readiness is the extent to which we've been able to provide support to learners who will be writing this year, and the system readiness talks to the examination system itself. The two colleagues will help me to deal with those two main parts. Part A will be dealt with by Dr. Maboya, who is the Deputy Director General for Curriculum. And then Part 2 will be dealt with by Mr. Padayaki, who is the Deputy Director General for the Planning Branch where exam is located. We're going to try and share the time allocated to us, but we'll be prudent with the time that you have allocated. So the purpose of the presentation is to appraise the committee on this report. Chair, we depart from this important extract from the National Development Plan. Three cardinal factors or variables are captured here. The first one, we are reminded that South Africans are entitled to have access to an education and training system of the highest quality. The second important factor is about significantly improving learning outcomes, which is what we're trying to do throughout the entire system, not only in grade 12. May I remind the honorable members that grade 12 is a culmination of efforts made from birth, even before birth, until these learners leave the system. The third point is about improving our performance in international standardized tests. Chair, again, just a reminder that for 2019, we are administering TIMSS. TIMSS is an acronym for Trends in International Mathematics and Science, that's T-I-M-S-S. It's written by grade 5 and 9. Grade 5 and 9. So the results of TIMSS should be available next year. And in 2020, we'll be administering PIRS, P-I-R-S, Progress in International Reading and Literacy Studies. That's the test in 2015, which said 78% of learners could not read with understanding in mother tongue. It meant, you know, all learners who took this test in mother tongue, whether it's English, if your mother tongue is English, if your mother tongue is Afrikaans, you know, all those who took the test in mother tongue. So we'll be writing that in 2020. So we are in a season of international and national assessments. Of course, national assessments happen every year. Size and shape, this is who we are, just as a reminder. And quickly, we have 25,000 schools, roughly, and 23,200 of those are public schools. Only 1,800 are independent schools. Just as a reminder, and this is just a summary to indicate that we've got 12.3 million learners, as against 589,000 who come from independent schools. And the rest, I'll leave it for committee members to engage with. Well, in terms of full-time and part-time centers, we've got 6,887 centers for full-time candidates. For centers, Chair, you can also interchangeably use schools. The majority of them are schools where these learners will be writing. And part-time, we've got 4,179. All in all, it's 7,399 centers where we'll be administering the National Senior Certificate this year. I will leave the number of learners because Mr. Padayaki will cover that later. Learners with special education needs. I know that there are members who've got a very special place for learners with special education needs in your honorable committee. We've got 73 centers where these learners will be writing, full-time candidates, 1,504 of them. In terms of part-time candidates, we've got 18 centers, and we have 356 of them. And if we add all of those together, it takes us to 75 centers, 1,860. May I just remind the Honorable Committee that in the result of 2018, these learners performed far much better than your learners who write in public ordinary schools. They performed over 80%. When the system performed at 78%. That's very important. We are cautiously optimistic even this year about their performance. And by the way, last year, South African Sign Language was written in grade 12 for the first time. So this will be the second year that South African Sign Language will be written in grade 12, and the numbers have gone up. Correctional services, and I like saying, Chair, there's no place to hide for basic education. If we don't find it in homes or in streets, we'll follow you wherever you might be. And these are the centers. We've got 10 centers. We've got 125 full-time candidates. Part-time, we've got 8 centers. And we've got 87 learners. All in all, 14 centers, 212. These learners also perform quite well. We do support them. We provide study guides. We work with correctional services officials to provide the requisite support. So we are also cautiously optimistic that this time around they should be doing well. Now, this one just gives a quick synopsis of the ages of these learners, both full-time and part-time candidates, but also first-timers in grade 12. And this is significant, Honorable Machesi, in the light of some discussions we had on Tuesday, especially around the number of learners who enter the system and those who leave the system. The real challenge in our system is not so much dropout, and I hope the media and everybody will be able to capture this. Our major challenge is failure and repetition rate. In other words, learners are trapped in the system, and people think that because they don't come out of grade 12 after 12 years, it means they've dropped out. That is not true. And we will even point that out when we present on GEC next week. The dropout rate is between 13 and 15.2%, the actual dropout rate. But learners are trapped in the system, as you can see here. Some of them take more than 12 years to finish schooling. You can see we even have 29-year-olds, 28-year-olds, 27-year-olds. Ideally, these learners should be finishing between 16 and 17 years. They should be finishing school. Yeah, 18. Yeah, sorry, 18. Yeah, 18, which means that, quite a number of them, you know, stay in the system for until very long, as you can see the numbers. So I hope it will be clarified today so that even professors out there who say 50% dropout rate, honorable members will be able to say, no, it doesn't exist, your 50%. Go and check the numbers. Okay, this is just the assessment which was done with provinces, and we looked at quarter one and quarter two. May I just say, quarter two is a better predictor for the outcome of the final exam, end of the year. Most schools finish curriculum coverage or finish the syllabus by June. So by June, they would be able to even set papers in such a way that learners are prepared even for the end of the year. The exam that comes in September, which is also called preparatory exams, trial exams, is of a much higher standard, higher than even the test or exams that learners would write in October and November. And that's why we believe the June exam is a better predictor. It has proven so. I mean, we use that even to to throw our eyes into the crystal case. So this is what we did. We looked at quarter one and quarter two, but we also said to provinces, make your own analysis. Where do you think you would be? And this is the response that we got. This is Eastern Cape, this is Free State, and this is Gauteng, and this is KwaZulu-Natal, and this is Limpopo, and this is Mpumalanga, this is Northern Cape. Chair, I'm sure you'll be happy that you see Northern Cape now. You complained earlier on that Northern Cape didn't appear. Northwest and Western Cape. Now, honorable members, if you take this analysis, and then take the data that Dr. Maboya is going to present to you of the actual figures of quarter one and quarter two, you can make your own prediction of what is likely to happen. In education, if all things are equal, and this report that we are presenting, we'll also be presenting to Umalusi in a much more updated version, because some of the information that would come after all the information from September would have been collected, and even after then, standardized assessment and so on. Then on the 16th of December, we'll be presenting to Umalusi something called evidence-based report. And we'll be able to say to the assessment and standards committee that these are the qualitative inputs that went into the system. And therefore, if all things are equal, because we've been tracking performance from quarter one up to the last quarter, this is how the picture should look like. And then they'll be interrogating the actual performance from the raw marks in December, coming from the October, November, and compare it with what we have presented to them. In the majority of cases, there'll be a tally in that performance because we're tracking from quarter one up to quarter three. So I now want to hand over to Dr. Maboya to do part A. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I'm going to present on learner readiness, which should be part A of our presentation. As an introduction, we just reflecting on some of the issues that would affect the type of support that we provide to learners in order to make them ready for the writing of the grade 12 exams. In particular, we're trying to also indicate to members that support to learners, especially for your high-stakes exams, is not a new phenomenon. It is something that happens all the time to make sure that we improve the learning outcomes of our system. So we're defining it as a package of support, a broad package of support that we provide to learners to ensure that they improve their learning outcomes. This is the type of support that we provide in terms of different themes. You will have the four themes, which are categorized in terms of quarters. In quarter one, our focus is mainly around making sure that the data that we get from the grade 12 results, we analyze it, and we inform our plans going forward. Then in term two, after interventions have been implemented, our role as national is to ensure that we monitor and measure the impact of those interventions. And then we would then look at state of readiness, which is what we normally do in the third quarter, which is what we are also reporting to the committee today. And lastly, then it would be the administration of the real exam. This is the model that we adopt in terms of learner support. In the main, it's about the teachers, how we empower our teachers in areas where they have found to be weak, areas around content, areas around methodologies, and text is in terms of extra text materials that we provide to these learners, as well as teacher guides in some instances, and the time to say how do we then try to expand the teaching time in terms of your Saturday classes, in terms of your afternoon classes, in terms of your holiday classes. Focus areas for learner support, these are the areas that we normally focus on. I've already alluded to some of them. Extra tuition is the main one. I think it's the most dominant one and the most visible one. Additional LTSM that we provide, example would be your study guides, ICT utilization, common examination papers that have been written, curriculum coverage monitoring to ensure that each and every aspect that has to be covered within each and every subject is indeed being covered, and teacher development and as well as psychosocial support. We do have a framework that we call the National Strategy for Learner Attainment, NSLA. Now, this is what it means. It is a strategic framework that coordinates all our efforts to improve learner performance. So ours is about improving the learning outcomes. Therefore, this particular framework helps us to coordinate all those interventions. But it also serves as a reporting tool, because on a quarterly basis, then provinces do report on the interventions, on progress that they've made, including tracking learner performance throughout the year. And these are the key pillars of the national strategy. We have 9 of them. As you can see, we are really covering the whole spectrum of what would consist the elements of school functionality. That is, your ECD is also covered, your GET, your FET, your math, science, and technology. So it's all about those elements that would ensure that there is a school functionality. The implementation of the NSLA happens at various levels and for various purposes. For instance, at DBE level, it will be more about, it's used more for monitoring progress and providing feedback to the system and to the provinces. And at provincial level, it's about making sure that they implement what is contained in the framework and report progress on quarterly basis. And it does also affect the district level as well as the school level. Now, the NSLA oversight visits, in terms of monitoring the implementation of the strategy, we do what you call oversight visits. And this quarterly one oversight visit and the monitoring purpose, as I indicated, the purpose is to ensure system-wide functionality, but also to ensure a seamless delivery of quality learning and teaching across the entire system in a multidisciplinary approach. And all this we are doing in an attempt to improve the learning outcomes. These are the visits that we conducted in the first quarter. We had 3 teams that were dispatched from the DBE, and they covered all the 9 provinces. And these are the key findings from those oversight visits. When we do oversight visits, we also pick up on best practices, because then we would ensure that we replicate them throughout the 9 provinces. So these are some of the best practices that we pick up during our first quarter oversight visits. We noticed that most of the provinces and districts are now engaging in deep-level reflections and analysis of the results. And that has been found to be quite useful in terms of them customizing their interventions. We've also noticed that the provinces and the districts are no longer just doing interventions for the sake of interventions, but the interventions are now targeted. They know which subjects to target, and they would know which groups to target. And these are best practices that we are also trying to replicate throughout the system. And these are some of the recommendations. For instance, the first recommendation refers to the gap that we identified, which is the fact that we found that in other instances, targets were one-dimensional, in the sense that the targets were only looking at the quantity and not looking at the quality. The quality, as we know, in this context, is more about, you know, the number of bachelors that we want to achieve at the end of the year. So these are some of the things that we picked up, and one of the recommendations was that provinces must and districts must actually adopt a balanced approach, such that when they do the interventions and they set the targets should not be only about the pass rate, but also about the quality, the number of learners who would get what we call, what we used to call exemption. Learning and teaching support materials, we also provide support in terms of making sure that these learners do have textbooks. And we have been able at national level to provide what you call Siyavula textbooks. These textbooks cover a number of subjects, including your mathematics, science, life sciences, and so on. And it covers grades from grade 10 up to grade 12. Mind the Gap series, these are the study guides that have been designed at national level, and they have also been distributed to provinces. And these are the number of copies that we have been able to deliver per province. Altogether, as you can see, copies that have been delivered is almost 1.1 million. And we covered mainly economics, geography, accounting, and life sciences for this year. But we have always been providing provinces with study guides for other subjects. These are the new subjects that we wrote study guides for. ICT professional support. National has also been able to support provinces and districts in terms of developing a repository of electronic curriculum aligned content resources. And this included study guides, interactive workbooks, free core textbooks, and videos. Offline e-textbooks, textbooks that are electronic, but that would not necessarily need connectivity, we have also been able to provide provinces with that. And broadcasting, we have always also been able to broadcast lessons around exam revisions on our DBE channel for grade 12 and DBE channels on various platforms. And working together with Mindset, we have also been able to provide these lessons and revision programs. Digital state-owned textbooks, I think we have been reporting that as DBE, we have been developing what we call state-owned textbooks, but we have also gone further in terms of digitizing these textbooks. So these are the textbooks that we have also provided to provinces and districts in order to support learners. These are the number of state-owned textbooks in terms of texts that were provided to provinces. DBE website content distribution, we're just reporting on the number of users that were able to record from January to June 2019 to say that in terms of users, we've had about 1.7 million users, and in terms of hits, we're talking about 8.8 million. So clearly, you can see that there is a lot of interest in terms of using the materials that we have uploaded on our DBE website. Broadcasting, as I indicated, there is an educational TV channel which is available on what you call open view high definition channel, which is your channel 201, and DSTV channel 319. And StarSat platforms. These are the platforms that we are using for broadcasting, and members will also have a look at the others. And we also have telematics, which was originally used only by the Western Cape, but we have seen that this is one of the good practices that we have been able to
replicator cell outside the Western Cape, and now it's been used by the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and the IBP, which has been used by the Free State through the Free State University. And Mindset website, we have uploaded content there, and then there's some of the other ICT platforms that we are using. And provincial learner support programs, provinces also have what they call a provincial strategy for learner attainment. So they also have their own programs that they run. In the main, they have what we call vacation schools that they would run for autumn, for winter, as well as for spring holidays. And this the rationale for conducting such holiday programs. And so we just want to emphasize the fact that the reason why we are doing this is mainly because of socio-economic factors, because we have realized that most of our learners come from very impoverished communities, and therefore their parents would not be able to afford extra tutors. So we, provinces are providing this, but it's also because of the scope and the width of our curriculum, such that at times you are forced to have such extra classes so that you can be able to cover the curriculum. Vacation schools purpose, this is the purpose, to sustain improvement in learner performance and to increase the number of learners. Now this one is speaking directly to issues of quality. And the vacation school target participants, these are the target. Normally we target progress learners, we target learners who are at risk, learners who are achieving at level 1 and 2 in identified subjects, and we also look at moderate and high achievers. So our program is highly differentiated in nature because it's for specific targets. And the 2019 winter school program size, altogether, we had a total of 1,778 centers where these winter programs were run. And the number of learners that participated is 288,434, and the number of days, of course, varied from one province to the other. So winter school monitoring, as DBE, we monitored winter schools, and a total number of winter schools that were visited is 247. As you can see, we had the special subject specialists from DBE who had to go out and monitor these winter schools across 9 provinces, and we had a total of 135 of such winter schools that were, or centers that were visited, and the Director General visited 112 of these winter schools. So there's a picture of the Director General interacting directly with the learners, trying to find, amongst others, whether they are really benefiting from the winter classes or whether it is just a waste of time. And this is the breakdown of the provinces and the number of centers that were visited by the Director General. In all, we are talking about almost 115 of them. And the next slide, members, is on the vacation school focus. What is it that our winter or our vacation programs were focusing on in the main? And we found that in terms of the winter school, the focus was mainly on revision. And as you can see, even with your spring classes, mainly it was around revision. And curriculum coverage is also one of those things that we said, because of the size, the scope, and the width of the curriculum, it's always important, therefore, to focus on this particular area. Duration of vacation school programs, as you can see, we try to juxtapose the winter ones with the spring ones, and then in winter, as you can see, I think most of the schools covered 10 days, and it's because of the duration, of course, of the winter holidays. And in terms of spring schools, I think most of them covered about 5 days. Again, it's about the length of the holidays on average. So I'm not going to go deep into this, but we also reflected on the number, the average number of hours that were allocated per day, and I'm not going to waste time on that. But what was also interesting is for us to find out as to what is the criteria that is being used in terms of the selection of topics that are going to be dealt with at those centers. And we found that in most cases, in 72.9%, it was about the revision of past year question papers. And but we also had some of the targets and some of the priorities that come from the district, which also directed what needs to go into the program. And the graph here is looking at the subjects that were offered. As you can see, these are our non-language subjects, but mostly you can see that the subjects that we are focusing on are subjects that we refer to as your high enrollment subjects. So these are the subjects that are mostly offered in these winter classes. This would include your math, your math literacy, your life sciences, and all these high enrollment subjects. Subjects offered non-language subjects. Spring schools, the same trend can also be observed to say that even here we are targeting high enrollment subjects. Your accounting, your economics, your history, your geography, your accounting and maths and mathematics. Languages offered in both cases, as you can see, the language of medium, I mean the medium of instruction, which is English, becomes our focus area. So in both cases, as you can see, likely we offer English file, English first additional language. And quality of teaching observed, as we were monitoring, we were also able to get a sense of the quality of teaching that is happening in those centers. And as you can see, these are the comments with regards to the monitors. The monitors were telling us that 73% of the respondents were saying that the quality was quite good. So in both cases, as you can see, the quality is from good to excellent, largely. And this is precisely because when teachers are being identified for teaching at these centers, provinces and districts go for highly experienced teachers and teachers who have also track records of producing good results in their respective subjects. Attendance in percentages, those are the percentages in terms of attendance, and learner experiences, as I indicated, we also go to an extent of finding out from learners what are their experiences of these centers, and these are some of the impressions that we got from learners. And by and large, learners were indicating that they are really benefiting from these extra classes. Learner impressions, winter schools and the spring classes, almost the same. 88% of them were saying they found the programs to be highly helpful. The best practices that we want to share with the committee with regard to winter schools is that we have seen an increase in the number of small subjects normally, I mean, in the past, we would just focus on your high enrollment subjects, but it has since been observed recently that we have included smaller subjects, and we have also noticed that there's a high level of parental support in some of the centers where parents are taking responsibility for maybe cooking for learners as well as for providing security in these centers, especially your hostel centers where learners are being accommodated. Principal best practices. We've also seen some best practices, good practices in terms of spring schools. We have seen partnerships with private companies, mining companies are coming to the party. We have seen that happening in provinces like the Free State. We have seen partnerships in provinces such as Gauteng and so on. Accommodating learners that are not part of district projects, and this is becoming a common phenomenon. And especially learners who are coming from ex-modality schools, they are now beginning to join district projects because in your ex-modality schools, you don't really see such interventions. Subject-specific interventions, members, we have tried also to give you just a synopsis of the interventions per subject, and we have taken examples from different provinces. So I'm not going to go through all the slides, but maybe I can just indicate that in each and every subject, what we normally also provide is the type of intervention in that particular subject. What is the type of intervention that was provided? For instance, in this case, accounting in the Eastern Cape, we've noticed that they provided assessment tasks that that cover content to be taught ahead term, meaning that for each and every term, they would provide those tasks that cover the content. And they would also indicate the criteria for selecting the target group. For instance, in this case, they have specifically targeted learners who have registered for accounting in English, and they've also targeted schools that obtained less than 70% in the previous year. So, as I indicated, this covers a whole lot of subjects where interventions were provided, and we have just taken examples from different provinces. And maybe I should also talk about the support that was given to learners who will be writing South African Sign Language this year. Remember, the DG indicated that it was written for the first time in 2012 last year. So this will be the second cohort that will be writing. So this is the type of support that was provided to these learners. Provinces, all provinces ensured that they provide assistive devices for these learners. 15 schools for the deaf offer grade 12 in 2019. So we have 15 schools that will be from which learners will be writing the subject this year. Extra tuition was provided to these learners in afternoon, in the form of afternoon classes, Saturday classes, and during the holiday period. And LTSM was also provided to them because now we had at least question papers that were written last year, so it was easy for us then to revise question papers for them in that. And learner performance, this is one of the things that we also track throughout the year, and in this case, we are making a comparison between, we are making or doing what we call year-on-year quarterly comparison of learner performance in 2018 and 2019, and where we have red, that would be where performance is lower than in 2018, and For the orange color, it will be where it is similar, and for the green color, that will be where it is. It has improved compared to the previous year. So I'm sorry, it's supposed to be 28 in performance, better than 20. I mean, 2019 performance better than 2018. That's just a typo. Non-languages. So we also provided you with information regarding all the subjects and also in terms of different provinces, how they perform. We are only here sharing the pass rates. For instance, in mathematics, if you look at the performance in mathematics, comparing mathematics in quarter 1 and 2 of 2018 and 2019 respectively, as you can see that in quarter 1, there was a better performance as compared to quarter 1 in 2018 in the Eastern Cape, but the performance did not change in quarter 2 as compared to quarter 2 of 2018. In fact, it has improved, I think, slightly so. It's almost the same because the other one is 29.6, the other one is 30, so when you round off, it's almost 30%. So this is how then we can read and interpret this. But I'm just going to rush through this slide and then go straight to the summary because we have provided a summary of a performance.
The subject.
Yes. So this is the summary that we are providing to say that in mathematics, for instance, performance will be similar or lower than the corresponding period in 2018. And the period that we are talking about here is quarter 1 and quarter 2. So we've seen that. Mathematical literacy performance for most provinces similar to the performance of 2018. All provinces except one performed above 70% in both terms in 2019 in physical sciences. And life sciences performance dropped in most provinces in 2019. Agricultural sciences is most similar to the performance in 2018. Accounting performance dropped slightly from 2018. Economics performed almost similar or dropped in comparison to 2018. And business studies remained stable in comparison to 2018. History improved when you compare to term 2 of 2019 and 2018. Geography performance remained stable. IFAL performance dropped in a number of provinces in term 2. IFAL would be your English first additional language. And this is the performance in terms of languages, and I'm not going to go into them again, but rather, yes. And that will bring me to the end of part A of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'll take you through the system readiness. And just to indicate that some of the information that I'm sharing with at yesterday's presentation by Malusi, we sort of, they overlap and in fact confirm what we as the Department of Basic Education and Provincial Education Department have undertaken over the 2019 year. And basically, as the National Department and Provincial Department, our role is to ensure that the exams are credible so that when Malusi Quality assures it, we are able to indicate that they have given approval, and we find that the currency of the certificate is intact, and that when it's presented by our learners at any institution, whether locally, nationally, or internationally, it basically retains its identity as a valid certificate. I think this slide sets out in this
different colors, the processes that we undertake, the national department, the provincial department, and that which we do with Melusi itself, covering the different processes from registration to the setting of papers, moderation of SBAs, printing, monitoring, and eventually into the standardization and resulting process with certification. So I'm just summarizing, but our presentation basically covers these different areas that we undertake. And in terms of our readiness, which we also refer to as audit, these activities take place in May and June. That's to take care of the senior certificate examination, but it's also part of checking the preparations for the November examination. And then we also undertake another, which is what we refer to as a state of readiness report, which is presented to heads of department as well as the Council of Education Ministers in September. So the current status, basically our intention is to ensure the integrity of the examination is intact. We are comparable to the rest of the world. And the certificate is internationally recognized, and this may not be acknowledged out there when people make comments about the NSC, but there are learners that have been accepted with the certificate we have at universities in the United States. We have benchmarked the 2018 examination papers, some of them again with Cambridge International Examinations and USAF, University of South Africa, representing all the universities. In the past, we have actually also used the Scottish assessment authorities as well as the New South Wales. And locally, we also have other bodies like AMISA, which is a body of mathematics teachers who have always commented and provided us reports on the mathematics papers that are written. So we are always looking at security in the interest of ensuring that the exam is not compromised, as well as marking strategies, and these come from the discussions with the Melusi in regard to taking standards to another level. And we are ultimately looking at modernizing the examination assessment system, and some of the processes we've undertaken is to look at an e-examination system. So we've already started some of those, but in the main, it's driven by manual processes and human beings in particular who have sacrificed over many years their individual holidays, and their families have been without them. So in looking at the different aspects we cover, on question papers, I've spoken about international benchmarking. We look at training of examiners. We're developing an item banking system so that that can also be made available to teachers. We also undertake a pre-writing of question papers in that we get teachers who have excelled in their subjects or the panel itself to basically write the paper. If we said it's a 3-hour, it doesn't help to have a paper where children don't finish. So if the examiner cannot do that, then there's something wrong in the way the paper has been set. We also look at editing. There are very few errors that appear. We have had issues regarding the printing of when we have pictures in it as well. So we've looked at trying to improve that. And the fairness of question papers, in that the child in Limpopo may interpret something in a different way from a child in the Northern Cape. And if you have, we've had this where the minister has raised issues when we talked about lower grades, where you want children to write about the sea but have never been to the sea, or a train ride when they've not. So the same would apply at the grade 12 level, but within the exam guidelines that have been set out. In movement of question papers, it's about storage, the vetting of staff. I'll come to that later in another slide that's up there. So we are auditing all these, and as well as training of the different officials involved. In terms of marking, it's an issue that is always looked at in each of the examinations, from appointments of the markers and as well as the marking itself. And we have introduced what we call marking standardization meetings. So it's not just standardization of the results, but also to ensure that marking is standard across all the centers. And we have, I'll raise issues with more details on centralized marking, and the electronic marking will come too. It's not actually officially part of the process, but Gauteng will be undertaking an exercise, which they've done so in the senior certificate exam in June. But all the papers will be marked the way we have done, as we've regulated it thus far. But post that process, there will be a sample of papers in certain subjects that they will mark electronically, with the intention that in 2 to 3 years' time, we would have all provinces looking at doing electronic marking. And if we have an opportunity another time next year, we'd share how that process will be undertaken, including the appointments of internal moderators and chief markers. So the resulting is, in terms of the examination computer system, we undertake a dry run with using data from previous years to ensure the system is ready once we have completed the processes of the examination and the marks have to be captured, and there's training of these personnel. And I think yesterday Malusi mentioned the issue of data sets and sometimes the different examination bodies not being able to do that. But DBE with its data sets, the data sets that we have and Malusi need to match, and that's also applicable to the other assessment bodies like IEB and Sakai as well. Then the management of irregularities, and we will indicate how that audit had been undertaken in respect of irregularities. And at the end of the process, after the writing, learners would receive their certificate. So there's issues related to the certification and the receiving of that. All certificates are basically issued by Malusi, but as PEDs and the DBE, we have a role to play in that respect. And the monitoring, we have a detailed management plan. We continuously monitor it, and it's through the different meetings we have with PEDs, we ensure that we're able to track progress, and we are required to provide reports to EDCOM and CEM throughout the year. Now, in preparation, we have finalized the registration of candidates. We've set 147 question papers, which have been approved by Malusi, and we've also set the papers, which have also been approved by Malusi for May-June 2020. In the event of one of the papers being compromised, that is our backup paper. And we've finalized the moderation for the preparatory exam has actually been written, but we've been involved in 10 of the key subjects, the high enrollment subjects. And we currently, I'll give details regarding SBA. We've completed the first phase in which we look at SBA in each of the two districts across all 9 provinces. So in working with the PEDs in these visits, what does occur is the DBE has personnel involved, but we also include heads of exams from other provinces to join. If we were in the Western Cape, we would find it would be DBE officials together with maybe the head of Mpumalanga would join that team. So it's both an audit process as well as a process to learn about best practices that are being carried out in the system. So these visits were completed by the end of September. Now, on the enrollment or registration, in this exam we've had just over 620,000 learners full-time. We've registered all on SIT. There's different reasons from medical, and the other would also affect this number would be the multiple education opportunities. With part-time, we have 169,000 learners registered. In the main, they would not be writing all 6 subjects, but there are some learners that do write. So in that process, some I may have written in previous examinations. So this is the same information in a different form of the barrels that set out over the last 7 years. This slide on slide 154 is looking at subject enrollments. In the main, the majority of subjects are less than the previous year. We've had increased numbers in history and mathematical literacy, and mathematics has been 11,000 less. But when we look at the new, this is the same information in comparison between the 2 years. But when you look at the new subjects, I draw attention to technical maths. There's not much growth, but it's another 11,000 learners that will write technical maths for the second. This will be our second year. Same with technical science. And in South African Sign Language, we had 54 were enrolled last year, but we actually had less than 50 who actually completed the examination. This year we have 99 in those 15 schools that Dr. Maboya had mentioned. So there really hasn't been any growth, but I think as the three-stream model unfolds and we put our efforts into it, we'd find that these subjects would need to grow in terms of what we want to achieve in respect of the technology subjects and at the end of the day. On progress learners, there's a slight decline. It will be at 124,000 who have actually been registered. So on the examination, in terms of the audit on management, we've covered staff capacity issues. I think it was raised yesterday. This is always indicated. But these are brought to the attention of the heads of department, and there are processes in how to deal with it. So some require posts to be filled, but they won't be filled in time for this examination. They do offer the employees overtime, as well as in some instances additional people are brought in. But we do not see it is a risk that's identified, but it's not one that's of on a high level. We've dealt with the overtime in terms of the Public Service Act, where you're not supposed to earn more than 30% of income above what you earn annually. So there are some employees based on overtime would have exceeded this. We've got approval from the Minister of Public Service and Administration. And provinces have actually done full state of readiness audits on their own with each of the districts, and we have verified this. Now, in the ongoing process to improve the examination system, some have decentralized some of the functions and delegated to districts, but this is not basically standard across the system. Where resources are available, provinces have taken that initiative. And as we go forward, we look at trying to standardize the district structure and the roles and responsibilities for all nine provinces. Registration of the candidates and the centers. In uploading the candidate data, we have actually provinces that have used the SASAM system. And you've had five in this examination. Western Cape uses the CMIS. Mpumalanga rolled over the grade 11 data. And KZN and captured afresh together with Northwest. And in fact, Northwest have SASAM's data available. We've actually done a check where if they had used SASAM, there would have been not much difference with the capture that they had done. So we're likely to see next year about six and maybe another that will actually use SASAM. So it saves time as well as money in that respect. The multiple exam opportunities will be for the last time, and these have been verified at provincial level, and some have delegated this responsibility to circuit managers and district officials. On the registration of centers, all the independent centers are audited, and then they are basically categorized in terms of risk from high, medium, and low risk. And where they are identified as high risk, then the provincial education department will manage the examination in that respect. On immigrant learners, those who are basically in the country who have their documentation, there would be no issue in terms of writing. Those without documentation would basically be allowed to write, but once they've completed, they will need to produce their documentation in order to receive the certificate. This is something that Melusi has prescribed, and we also deal with the issue of unregistered candidates, but we do not send learners away. They are allowed to write. We do have in the regulation that you need an ID to basically write and to have that compulsory, but I think in the back of our mind, we're looking at that court case that's dealing with the admission of learners and documentation at the end of the day, which may impact on this. But we always say that learners need to pitch up at the exam centers with their IDs. But if a child is not with the ID, then they're allowed to write, but then we do technically declare the irregularity until we've cleared it up. On question paper development, I did say that we've done the editing and proofreading. The examination papers were handed over to provincial departments in two batches. Provincial departments have been printing and packing their papers. And as exam papers are moved around, they are basically escorted by the South African Police Service. In provinces, we don't try to go into too much detail in the public to indicate what those measures are in order not to, if anyone has some ill intentions, to make them wiser. We've adapted papers for the blind, the deaf, the partially sighted, and there's been in-house quality assurance and fairness in terms of language and the standards, and looking at ensuring there's no bias and errors in those papers. So printing and packing, we actually have yesterday I think the mention was about scanning the papers after, but we have state-of-the-art printing facilities in most of the provinces. Three provinces are printing with government printers, Northwest, Northern Cape, and Limpopo, and their security has been really strengthened. The Free State printing is done by CETA, and provinces do automated pre-sealing, and it's mentioned that Free State is excluded, but that doesn't compromise the security itself. So I think at some stage, if you have an opportunity to visit the Gauteng one, from start to finish, the process is basically automated. We actually received a presentation last week. Administration of South African Sign Language, Dr. Maboya did indicate. So it's a different kind of way of writing an exam. We appoint examiners, internal moderators, you need signers, you need interpreters, and you need to video the actual signing by the learner, which is completely different from the pencil and paper approach. And so the question papers have been approved. We have a backup paper for that. We actually don't really have candidates that write again in May or June. So we've audited all 50. Have been visited and support. DBE has actually prepared a preparatory paper, which was their trial, which they used as their trial exam in August or early September, so that learners are familiar with the process in terms of how the exam is conducted. So these aspects have been provinces are attending to if there are any outstanding matters, and this paper will be marked central in Pretoria. So we have guidelines in respect of the sign language. The time period is more than what we which is normally offered in terms of a 3-hour or 2-hour paper. There's additional time given. The time for reading is the same as what we offered last year. The marking it will be in Pretoria. Now, accommodation and assessments for learners with special needs, they can be depending on what the request is for and the disability, you can have a scribe, and so provinces have criteria for the appointment of scribes and readers. So these are referred to as concessions when an application is made. We're looking at in 2020 to put this on the SASAMS, but not just at grade 12, but from all grades, so that we could have better planning when we get to the grade 12 year. And the concession is granted where provinces have appointed professional staff to identify and evaluate the special need that the learner has. So you just can't just come and say, no, I need someone to write for me. Sometimes children don't have arms, so then you need someone to do the writing, although they are able to basically pass the examination. Storage and nodal points, these have been audited. There are criteria that are set, and a few of the storage points did not meet the criteria, so they were not endorsed. So provinces had to re-look at how they deal with that or ensure that the storage center complies. So and these are the criteria under D on slide 176. If you don't have a strong room, you're basically thrown out. Inadequate space in the strong room because it's too small, and the manager needs to be at a particular level. And then we talked about the double locking system, that two people need to be able to open the safe. And these slides, I'm not going to go into the detail, but it sets out what requires, what you need to do in order to have full compliance, partial compliance, which you need to look at, and then the non-compliance, which I just outlined, which basically would mean that that would not be an approved nodal point or a storage facility. So I'd indicated earlier we had audited all the independent centers and they've been classified between the different risks. And high risk is basically you get a microscopic attention in terms of what you are doing at the exam center. Monitoring of the exams. So PEDs have monitored the districts and the functions, so that it's in all districts in the provinces that they have done. And they intend expanding the monitoring. They've been at 50 to 60%. We're looking at trying to get to 70 to 80%. It's dependent on resources and availability of person power in that respect. But you would note that basically in some provincial departments, officials are taken from other line functions to basically assist examinations. We spoke about the rotation of the resident monitor as well, so they're not permanently in one school, and in fact the approach is to monitor the monitor as well. I think that's what I was referring to in this slide. I think they covered that. And most centers collect the papers in the morning and the afternoon, and these are collected separately except where distances do not allow. And the DB protocol has to be followed when the collection happens and how it's stored, and the security is stepped up at these times, in the morning and the afternoon, and then there's a norm time in which the script has to be returned, and the distance between the center and the collection point is then taken into account. If a paper is 1 hour or 2 hours late, then that's an irregularity that we will look into, whether there's an issue, whether there's a vehicle that broke down, and so forth. We've done this in the past. And most often we find that there's some, maybe it was you were stuck in traffic or something like that. So it's rare that we find that people have taken it somewhere else and replaced the scripts. School-based assessment has also been looked at. We provided provincial departments with what is referred to as a statistical report, in that in terms of what was the final exam mark and what was the SBA mark, and we find that we are, in the past, Malusi was very critical of how SBA was being dealt with. We have, because of marks that were inflated, whether in different levels in the subject or the district or the school. But we have found that by following this approach, we have slowly been improving in that respect. And we've had more often finding that the mark between the exam and the SBA is getting closer together. There are instances that need to be addressed in certain areas, but moderation is helping in this regard from the DB and the PEDs. So we also moderated 11 of the key subjects for the prep exams across the 8 provinces, excluding the Western Cape. Agriculture science was included for the first time, and we provided feedback in terms of those papers that were set by PEDs, and this was done on a face-to-face basis. So this goes into details. We have done the first phase in June, July, and we are actually undertaking the life orientation in the last bullet life orientation of CAT, computer application technology, which will be undertaken from next week onwards. We completed all the life orientation in July. That was at that time. It was looked at again in this last audit. We also used a sampling technique in terms of looking at SBA moderation, in that we're not able to do everyone for each of the candidates entered. On marking. So we have had a national planning meeting with the PED marking managers in March. We have a standard operating manual, which we have updated, in terms of how marking would be undertaken. We have actually got approval for all the marking standardization meetings that will occur once the paper has been written, so to ensure that across the provinces that there is standardization of the marking. We spoke about the audit of the markers. We audit that. It's also a desktop, and in some instances we are on the site in the province in terms of auditing how markers were appointed. And if we were informed about certain irregularities in that respect, we would look into it at that stage, and even during the marking process. And I think I just need to make mention that this year the instruction is sometimes you have groups of markers that are appointed, but people don't pitch at the time. We've been told that in the past, the chief marker may cause people to pitch up, which they refer to as walk-ins. They are not to be none of those. And it can only be done by officials that are more senior in that respect in to do the replacements. And where the criteria has not been met for the appointment of markers, and because of the shortage of markers in certain subjects, this approval can only be given by the HOD. At the end of the day, we have also had arrangements with between provinces where there, some provinces have more markers in a particular subject to ensure that there is collaboration in that respect to take care of the marking. We also have centralized marking in the key subjects like agricultural management practice, agricultural technology, music, dance, and some of the small enrollments for the first additional language and second additional language. And this takes place in Pretoria under the control of the DBE, and we've issued circulars in respect of the standardized marking of subjects, especially in practical. In fact, your examination is already underway, especially for visual arts and design. There are children that are basically undertaking their practical examinations across the PEDs. In terms of payment, these have been, in terms of the PAM, we've updated in terms of the CPI adjustments that have been given by National Treasury for this year. These have been communicated to provincial department, and you'd note that we do not get, in the last 4, 5, 6 years, we haven't had an issue that when you come to January or February, markets are still waiting for payment. Most often in the last few years, you found that payment has already been made before Christmas to the markers, and where it brought to our attention, we have liaised with the HOD in respect of dealing with those issues. Irregularities, most of the provinces have the labor relations units, which are basically assisting the exam units in terms of trying to speed up irregularities in that respect, which has to be reported to the National Examinations Irregularities Committee, which has to finalize its report before we go to the approval meeting in December. And the minister has to sign off on that. The instruction is to ensure that all the irregularities are dealt with before the release of the results, which are when it's sent out to schools on the 8th of January. And only in exceptional cases will we grant additional time. And that's referring to probably what was discussed yesterday. It's more the high-profile cases that require investigation, and those are the serious breaches. And I think last year we did not have any of that nature compared to previous years when we had Vembe and the New Era school. So the instruction is basically to ensure that the irregularities, including the ones where children have crib notes and carrying cell phones into the classroom and so forth. And we've also discussed whether it's really needed to be referred to as an irregularity as such. So we have guideline documents in that respect. Certification, which is at the end of the process. And to summarize the slide, we've actually, for the May-June exams, the first bulk certification has already been done, and a second one will occur now in October. So for the learners, basically, is that about 3 months after the examinations, Melusi would, after we have verified and cleared all that, we'd have the certificates printed, and that would be sent to provinces, would send it to districts so that learners would get their certificate. They would get their statement of result, you know, after the writing of the examination. So we are also looking at, to in terms of not the bulk certification where individual certificates are requested, to try to reduce that time to 4 weeks. So this basically, with the same things that I've covered now, we've tried to cover in terms of the robots of the red, yellow, and green, serious concern, moderate concern, and good. And I'm not going into the details, but if you look at it, it covers the same areas that I referred to, question papers and so forth. And you'll find that the only red we have is under staff capacity, but this has been brought to the attention of HODs. And one of the things that do occur is that HODs ensure that examinations, especially the grade 12 one, does get all the resources that they do need, even if they do come and say that they have insufficient budget. And I think the DG will testify to that. He was once a HOD. The printing and packing, we did identify certain areas that need to be addressed in some provinces, but those processes are being taken care of. So these are the writing, the competency of markers, marking of monitoring regularities, school-based assessment across the board. We're looking at, there are some concerns. We have not perfected it, so that's why they're all yellow and capturing. So the generic risks, I think we mentioned the service delivery process. The security of question papers, even though we've got measures in place, will always remain a risk. The monitoring, we're trying to look at ensuring that we expand that. Staff, and we have senior certificate examination candidates. Those who wrote in... those who wrote the NSE in 2018 wrote also in November, in May, June. They would be able to write as a candidate in November, but according to the regulation, the senior certificate could not. So the minister has granted a concession, and we have on registration of learners after we informed them publicly, about 17,000 who have taken up that option. They've registered. We will report on how many actually sit. But they would not be part of the way we report for the full-time candidates at the end of the day. But this is in line with giving learners the second chance and in terms of having continuous opportunities to try to obtain the certificate. So we followed the same, the robots to indicate, and we have indicated as red community protests because it's not really something that we can predict. And the way we can predict, I indicated yesterday that we can, provinces can move them to other venues. And we are continually working daily basically with the NET joints and the prof jocks in terms of intelligence information. So we'll skip through the rest. And in coming to the conclusion, basically next Thursday and Friday will be information technology and the computer application technology, but the exam in itself on 2 weeks from now, Thursday the 23rd, we will start to write the subjects where the majority of learners commence the examination. The last paper would finish at around about the last week of November. Then marking will commence from the 1st of November and must be completed on the 14th of December. And we will have a preparation for standardization on the 21st and 22nd of December, a Saturday and a Sunday, and on a Monday we will meet with the MLUSI to deal with the standardization. And then just before, around the 28th or the 29th, will be the MLUSI will give us the go-ahead in terms of the release of the results, which is referred to as an approval meeting. The minister will officially announce the results on the night of the 7th of January, and at schools on the 8th the morning, all learners can pitch up at school to receive their results. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG and your team. That was quite a lengthy presentation, very detailed. Let me give to the members then to interact with the presentation, and it's an addition of the presentation we've received from Omalusi yesterday. So Honorable King and Honorable Masheed, Honorable Malachi, as well at once. But
morning, everyone, and thanks for that insightful presentation. I just want to talk about the security of the question papers, your norms and standards that you've set up. Is that across the board for all provinces? The concern also, which I've just picked up in your presentation, is also your pre-sealing of your question papers with the Free State not doing that. What interventions have you put in place to ensure that they do that? Because this can lead to all sorts of challenges going forward in the exam process. Your shortage of markers in certain subjects, I remember when Lucy was talking about it yesterday. What interventions have you put in place to ensure that each subject has adequate markers? I remember you just said no walk-ins will be allowed as of this year, like it's always been done. And then also on your age categories that you were highlighting on the screen, where does the correctional service writers students fit in to the whole process? Because I looked at ages 25, 27 and all of that. Comes to mind maybe they could be fitting in there as the full-time learners. And what I would have loved to have seen is how many learners, the second chance matric writers, how many of them are actually in the system. Remember, they don't do full, maybe I skipped it, but they don't do full subjects, mostly it's three. I would have loved to have seen that. Thank you. Anyway, you're doing a good job.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation, Dr. Ma Buya and Dr. Pidiaki. I know that you're doing a sterling job when it comes to examination. So I don't really have a lot of questions because I have confidence that you guys are going to do well as you've done over the years. The only thing that I have is really for the DG. It's, because if you were talking about that there's a very high repetition rate. I have never seen any statistics that shows, how high it is, of course, because I know that. But what I want to know is basically to say what is the actual repetition rate from grade 1 up to grade 12? And what is the acceptable rate of failure? Petlas. I don't know if you'll have that information or if I should maybe submit a question on that. And also, is there a study done or have we compared ourselves with other countries to see, where do we stand in terms of reputation? And do you think that, at some stage, should we put that as some kind of indicator and have a program that will specifically look at the improving the outcomes and also trying to reduce the failure rate. And also the other question that I have, I think that could go to Dr. Pidiaki. You're saying that learners have to have IDs, and if they don't have IDs, they are accepted. But then what happens to learners who have passports? Can they use their passports, or when you're talking about ID, are you talking about just a normal ID, or does a passport also include a form of identification?
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim. I think I'll start by welcoming the presentation. It's been a long week, and if you still have such quality presentation, it means that there's a lot of work that has been done. I think I'll first start by the issue of technical subjects. The report on technical subjects reflects that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think that we need to invest more, especially on the next financial year moving forward on the technical subjects, especially after the pronouncements of the President. That the main focus that each and every learner that leaves the system must leave with at least one technical subject. Now, we need to start a process of finding a way of making sure that at least each and every school, if they have a technical subject, at least they have one technical subject. Now, on the presentation that we have received, the issue of modulation, I know you have introduced a system of modulation where
learners in matric are able to take subjects according to what they can carry. How is it impacting the readiness moving forward, and how are those learners coming in to assist? Then the other issue that I think we need to have a clear position on is the issue of the releasing of results. There is the independent schools, they seem to get results before the public schools, and that gives them an advantage over learners of the public schools when it comes to moving further in institutions of higher learning. Now, because we are a pro-poor government, I think we must find a way of making sure that all these results are released at once, so that there's that level of equality. Because if you release those who are privileged, they get the results before the ones who are not privileged. It gives them an advantage to occupy institutions of higher learning before the ones from public schools. Now, we need to find a way of resolving also that issue. Yesterday, I raised the issue with the with Melusi, and they've referred it back to the DG and the minister on the issue of publication of matric results in newspapers. We need to have a discussion around that one. I have got a strong view that that process must be stopped, because we don't need to do that. If from grade 1 up until grade 11, learners have been receiving the results the same way they're receiving them. Even at matric, they can have the same process. Because anyway, ultimately, they still go to the school to collect their statements. Now, the publication of matric results, I think it creates us a lot of problems than solutions. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me also welcome the presentation. Just on the slide dealing with the age group of the candidates, well, I just want to ascertain or find out, are the 23 to 29-year-olds still in a class with 17-year-olds in one class and so on, or are they simply part-time candidates? And the second question would be, DG, you seem to have visited quite a lot of the centers in 5 days or so, because in winter, was it intensive or it was a touch and go exercise? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also join the queue and welcome the presentations. Like the Honorable Malachi has said, a lot of good work has been done in preparation for the final examinations. I need clarity on the two slides that were presented, slide 202, on the high number of unregistered candidates, and slide 164 actually indicates the high number of unregistered candidates, but slide 202 shows happy faces, green faces that all candidates has registered. So I need clarity on that one. The second one is on the budget that was utilized during the preparations. Dr. Padiaki indicated on the payment of the markers that is done by National Treasury, but what about the entire budget? Is it budgeted, the preparations for the exam, is it budgeted, and is it budgeted sufficiently? That is the question, and whether it is by the provinces or is it by the department itself? The last question, I think, it's also on the issue of, I think we'd need a presentation on that one, where there's a lot of learners that are trapped in the system. I think it would be a discussion for another time, even though it reflects on the presentation of today, because I think it's one of the things that we need to sort out as the department and the committee to say we find solutions in dealing with that one. Thank you very much.
Thanks, honorable members. Welcome, honorable Jaisa. We've been missing you. At least now we have you. We must just make sure we keep you here. I don't know how. Okay, no, you know why I'm saying that, you know. You know why I'm saying that. But anyway, Didi, I've got an interest in these kids that are writing NSC at age 19. Is it, yeah? 18. No, they start from 15 months old, 15 years old. That's my interest. That's 15 from the client. Yeah, what? Yeah. What? Once again, are they too clever? Or when you say, and yes, but I must say, I do applaud the support that you are giving to Matrix. I think it's quite really support that is needed to our children, particularly for winter and spring. But I think that support should not only be on Matrix. You know, you need to start to consider really giving it, even if it's just once, maybe winter, from grade 8. It should be something that is automatic, that from grade 8 we're giving that support till they are at grade 12, because in my view is that we are giving all resources now to one grade. But the second issue that I want to raise, which was raised by Dr. Mabuya, is on the PIRLS, on the results of 2018. You've mentioned that 78% of learners cannot read in their mother tongue. Can you probably take us, what are the plans then to improve the situation and reduce the percentage? Because I think it's a bit high. And then on page 65, on there is a slide on the winter and spring schools. There is a slide where you are saying that the quality of teaching is the 54%, which is good. But then, what are the indicators that are used for that? And then for interest sake, maybe just call me more, Mr. Parayashi, on the remark that you have made of our certificate when you benchmark it with your UK systems, because they are using A levels and O levels and AS levels, which is different from us. Then how then do you benchmark them with our certificate? Then, as a matter of interest, DG, the 78.2 that you got as a national percentage last year, you actually went back to 2013. And from there, you've been moving below that. Now you went back to 78. Is there projections for an improvement? Are we at least going to straight 8 now, which is 80% and more? Or what are the projections? Are you going up or down? By now, I think you will be able to give us that response. And that's from me. Thank you, teacher.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and thank you for the compliments as well. They come very seldom, especially at this level. We are used to hiding, and even your predecessors, they give them out very rare. But we really appreciate the comments. And I must say, part of the reason why we're working so hard is because of your role as oversight structures as well. In the past, we used to say, no, provinces will have to do what is expected of them, and then as part of the relay, hand over to us. It doesn't work that way anymore. We have to go down, soil our hands with provinces, and make sure that things are happening. In fact, the approach of the minister is that there's very little activity on policy development in Pretoria. So we must go down and strengthen policy implementation. The assessment, all assessments of the current administration and even previous administrations pointed to only one major failure, implementation. Policies are compared with the best in the world, but our major shortcoming is implementation. That's why all of us are just going down to try and work together with the rest of the value chain to make implementation happen. I mean, oversight structures do that as well. You go out for oversight visits to provinces. So we take it from you as well. So projections, Chair, you know, we did what we've never done to this committee today. We've given you so much data. We've given you trends. I'm sure any amongst you can do that projection. We've said this is the data of quarter one, quarter two, and we've even said quarter two is much more of a better predictor than all others. And then we've even said this is the projection that provinces are giving themselves, provinces. We've put it in here, Chair. So I really want to leave it for you to do that projection. We've not just said throw bones, but we've given you, you know, the entire kit of throwing bones, and we've given you the language of that kit. So I'm sure you'll be able to do that. No, Chair. All that I can say is that I'm cautiously optimistic. I strongly believe that improvement is followed by hard work, at least in education. We're not only labor intensive by numbers, you've got to sweat for improvement. And I've been out there, I've seen that sweat. But the extent to which it can yield a specific improvement, I still leave it for you. All right. Benchmarking with different countries who are using different systems. Mr. Pariaki will explain that more. I mean, the world has converged now. We're able to compare throughout the world. We're talking equivalence. I mean, when it comes to grades, they'll say an equivalent of grade 12 here in South Africa, in UK, it will be this. And that's why we're able to compare across the globe. In fact, sooner or later, learners themselves will be able to do that because we've become part of a global village. Standardization might very soon go out of the window as well with the advent of the fourth industrial revolution and, you know, competency-based skills and assessment instruments. So, I mean, learners might be able to assess themselves and be able to demonstrate certain skills. The issue of reading, Dr. Maboya, I'm sure we've got a comprehensive strategy and plan for reading, which has 9 pillars. I mean, at the fullness of time, we'll be more than happy to come and present to the committee. But I must also caution that, you know, improvements in education take time. I always warn that, unfortunately, I wish that things that we do now could yield results now. but I'm also very careful and cautious of political expediency, because you are not here forever. You are here for 5 years, and you want to see improvement. So I'm very sensitive to that. But I also cannot mislead you to say that what we do now will yield results now, because experts will tell that improvements in education, and many of you come from education, you know that it will take time for improvements to begin to show. So the strategy is there, Chair. At the right time, you could call us and say, come and present. What have you implemented? What are you seeing? We even track it. We're trying to track what we are doing to check whether we're moving in the right directions through action research and so on. So I agree, 110%. Support should happen to all grades and to all learners, and over the years the focus has been on grade 12. Now, even at the level of Umalusi is interested in what happened in the 12 years of schooling or 13 years of schooling. To some extent, they would say even before school, because we have to make sure that if these learners come into the system, are they school ready? And we are also developing those instruments that will be able to indicate whether when learners come to school, are they school ready? If they are not school ready, what do we do to get them school ready? That's the level of sophistication we are getting into. I said to some people, running education is becoming much more complex than flying an aeroplane. So people who are trained to manage education standards are going to be very high in future, because it's becoming a sophisticated area of work. So we also said the general education and training band becomes a focus. In other words, grade R to grade 9. Dr. Maboya and provinces have prioritized that area. The weakest area of the system is grade 7 to 9. That's our weakest in the system. Part of the reason is because it straddles between two types of schooling, schooling typology, primary school and high school. So we really, some provinces have even shifted their resources to say, you are focusing on primary schools, you are focusing on high schools. So we are looking at that, but we have agreed with the team that GET is now our focus. Because even your dropout rate, the presentation on GEC next week, Honorable Matches, will give you so much data, it's a pity I won't be part of it, on repetition rate per grade. It will give you that per grade. It will even attempt to share information with you. We've got that in abundance. We even have it, in fact, collected virtually every year through LURIS, SSMs. But we also conduct what is called school monetary survey. Every 2 years or 3 years, we've been conducting that. So we've got that data. So it's part of the presentation that's coming next week, but I could maybe share a little bit with you in a few minutes. Learners writing at age 15. All that it means is that schools do not always adhere to the admission policy and the admission policy. But there are complications around that. If you remember the Harris case, a couple of years ago, when there was an argument whether learners should start school at age 7 or could start even earlier than 7. And when we insisted, then parents took us to court, and they could demonstrate that if their child or children are ready for school, they should even be admitted if they are younger than age 7, because 7 is actually compulsory for them to be at school. But if 7 is compulsory, they must be at school. But they could actually attend school earlier than that. If you can demonstrate that your child has had the benefit of the appropriate ECD program, the danger is that it's likely to favor middle class than those who need this more. And that's the reality. And that's why you find some of these learners writing grade 12 at age 15. Yeah, even younger. I've come across somebody who started MBCHB medicine at age 15.
Okay.
It's because he or she would start it early because parents could afford to get that child ready for school and started school much earlier than even age 4 or even, 3 sometimes. Yeah. All right, and then those are the questions coming from the chair. Honorable Aduns, learners who are trapped, I think we could talk about that. Now, we were criticized when the Council of Education Ministers signaled that they are coming with automatic progression for grade 1 to 3. Yeah. Which is an international phenomenon. Most countries, even, the envies of this world, Finland and others, are not in favor of retaining learners. And by the way, it doesn't make educational and economic sense to retain learners. But our system over the years has been punitive. We believe that learners can perform better if you retain them. It doesn't make education, in fact, the research proves to the contrary, that some of them, if you retain, their confidence is dented, and some of them tend to perform worse for the rest of their lives. In one instance, we came across data that indicated that, for instance, in Gauteng, learners, 30% of learners were retained in grade 1. 30%. Gauteng is one of your best performing provinces, 30%. What value does it bring to the system? Learners in the foundation phase should enjoy school. You know, things like retaining them, they should be unheard of. They are at that age when they are introduced into the system and they need to enjoy. School must be home and school must be more enjoyable than home, actually. Which is how many countries are handling their systems. There's automatic progression, and I want journalists and everybody to go and check that out. We collected the data, we put it out, especially when we came up with the policy on progress learners. People said, where did you get this? Some even said, we suspect that it's happening in Africa only. It happens in first world countries. First world countries. When we are heckling and fighting, countries are advancing. They don't retain their human resources. And we get surprised later on when they are more advanced than us. When we've been retaining learners, getting learners to remain in the system for 15 to 16 years. So I think GEC presentation will shed quite a lot of data on that. And that debate can be taken up again at that point. We'll be able to provide data on failure, repetition, and even dropout rate, just to demonstrate the point. And as Mr. Padayaki indicated, part of the problems are structural. Over the years, our education system was only based on two streams. Over 90% has been academic stream. 10% or less vocational. But when we know that universities don't even have the capacity to take 20% of learners who meet the requirements at the end of every year, they don't have that. We only have 26 universities in this country. They don't have that capacity. Even if they did have the capacity to take them, I mean, we don't need so many for our economy. We need 60 to even 70% vocational and occupational. That's what Germans are doing. That's what other countries are doing. Learners are channeled towards the vocational and occupational stream. And the GEC is about that. It's about anchoring the system so that you are able to direct learners where the economy needs them more. So I hope that Chair will be able to address this much more than we are doing. And Honorable Malachi is right. I mean, the numbers are dropping. They should be increasing. But part of the problem is that in civil society, we believe that if children do vocational education and occupational education-related programs, they are not intellectually gifted. And there's a view that they work with their hands and not use their brains, which is a fallacy of, you know, unprecedented proportions. Some people have got their brains on their hands, by the way. They might be sitting here, they've got them here. I mean, the fourth industrial revolution is about these skills. If you don't have them, you don't have the future, and you don't have a competitive edge now and in future. Budget for exams, Mr. Padayaki is right, I used to be in provinces. What you see in red is the impact of budget cuts on running the education system. Exam is not exonerated. It's affected. I mean, you've heard what he said. Provinces, you know, they improvise, they increase hours of work. But there's a risk. And we get to confront the risk when the worst has happened. You know, when monitoring, which was supposed to happen, has not happened. Then you get to know that, by the way, we don't have money. And one day we need to come. I was disappointed with the FFC. I thought they would show you the impact of budget cuts. They didn't. But maybe at some point, Mr. Padayaki, we need to come and just show what is happening. Towards the outer years of the MTEF, provinces are getting in red. They are getting in red. Honorable Machisi would remember that even a CD at some point over the MTEF, we lost close to 7 billion. From Asidi. And when we talk about these things, sometimes we forget about. You know, we only remember when the Minister of Finance says, so much is given. The Minister of Finance will never come back and say, by the way, from this much that we have given, we have taken this much. He will never say that. Honorable Aduns, I think Mr. Padayaki will talk to slide unregistered candidates and slide 2 too. I'm sure he'll address that. Honorable Sewell, you asked, but I'm sure you were just commending. When we do this work, we finish when learners go to sleep. We work throughout the week and throughout the weekend. It takes more or less, I think it took us close to about 11 to 15 days. It was not 5. Yeah, it's 11 to 15 days. You won't be able to cover those in 5 days. So we, the entire team, we only stop when the centers close, because we want to cover as many centers as possible. The more, the merrier, and the better the data, and the more reliable is the data in terms of predictability. So, 23-year-olds and 26 in the same class, I think it's Honorable King, if I remember. Maybe we need to check that out, Mr. Padayaki. Some of these 26, 29 might be people in prison. But maybe you could shed light on that. But it's not an anomaly, because they are actually, from age 15, I think, they are adults already. We become worried when 16 and 18-year-olds are in the same class with 8, 7, or 6-year-olds. But at least, I'm sure, Honorable Sewell, you shouldn't be that worried if a 23-year-old is in the same space with a 26-year-old. But it then talks to our progression, which is not as normal as it should be. And Honorable Machesi said, have you benchmarked with other countries? I don't think we have that data, but maybe we could check with our researchers, Stephen Taylor and Martin Gustafsson, to do that work for us. they do an excellent job there, we'll ask them to do that. But our retention rate is out of kilter compared to other countries I know. It's just too high. It's much higher than other countries. But also I must caution that, for instance, Chairperson of Umalusi, Professor Volmik, was saying to me, Ethiopia has got a population of about 110 million, and I think about 30 million of the 110 are learners in their schooling system. Only 6% of those go to high school, through high school. Only 6%. In South Africa, we say everyone must go to high school. That's what we are saying. No, they are not the worst in Africa, by the way. They are not the worst. So, Honorable Malati, publications of exams. We had a debate on this. We had a public debate. We collected even views. There are views that are for and views that are against publication. So ordinary people like myself who come from villages would say, you know, I get the only opportunity in the year to go out to the sea at that time, and I don't have access to getting results for my children. When I'm on holiday or somewhere, I've gotten into this habit because it has been integrated into the way we do things. So we've got access to these results in that way. But the bottom line is that there are views against and views for. And the reason why we continued is that views for outweighed the views against. There is no empirical evidence to suggest that publishing results leads to unfortunate developments such as suicide. There is no empirical evidence. And we'd be more than happy to interact with that. Yeah. I know that you feel very strong about this. I'm not trying to convince you. I know that I won't. Well, the release of the results of the IEB will probably look at that. Yeah. Mr. Paraki will answer to that. But remember that IEB historically had about between 10 and 12,000 learners, which is the size of Bujanala district from the province where I come from. The biggest district in the northwest, 12,000, you'd have, you know, comparing with IEB, between 10 and 12,000. So it might be fairly easier for them to, you know, but Mr. Paraki will respond to that. MEOs, this is the last year for this policy. From next year, it will be part of the annals of our history. We'll not be having learners who would have modularized anymore. This is the last year. The Council of Education Ministers pronounced on this. I've already agreed with you on doing a lot of work around technical education. Technical education is the way to go. And in fact, learners who have done this subject and take up a career are paid far more than. In other countries, they are even paid more than a medical doctor, by the way. In other countries, they are paid more than a medical doctor. So as public representatives, I know you are going to help us to get broader civil society, parents, to buy into this idea that we have to go big in getting learners to go the technical, vocational, and technical occupational stream. Mr. Paraki will address the issue of the ID and the passport. And here is just my humble submission, Honorable Machis. As we become open and practice our democracy, we must also be careful not to open ourselves up for factors that would undermine the sovereignty of our country. Other countries have very stringent measures in protecting their systems, that you either meet these requirements and there is no compromise. You know, when you are in other countries, you know, when I'm in a country other than my country, I really feel like a foreigner. I really, from just touching the ground, I really feel that I'm not home here. I long for home immediately. I don't want to say much about this because the recent developments were very unpleasant for our country. But all that I'm saying is that we must run our system in such a way that the sovereignty of the country is not undermined, is not a free-for-all. Issues of fraud do not happen because we have opened the system for all and sundry. I agree, Honorable Machesi, I'm sure you'll have a dedicated discussion on, but I can give you this stats. I've got it here with me, so I can share it with you, but we could also give you the information of the repetition per grade. I think we've got about 6 slides on that in a presentation that's going to be made for GEC. The last comments for Honorable King, Mr. Parayaki will respond to the issue of the security of question papers. Shortage of markers. With e-marking comes the opportunity to also deal with this challenge. It is indeed true. Your observation is spot on. Some subjects are struggling to get markers. People are no more, you know, motivated to mark. But I think with e-marking also it will help us to deal with this challenge. Second chance matriculants are dealt with as part-time candidates. So their results will reflect for part-time candidates, as you correctly observed. I'm not sure, I think it was you, Honorable Key, to say they don't write all the 7 subjects. They write some of them, some 2, some 3, some 4. We now allow them to write as many as they want to. We used to restrict them. Maybe I must request Mr. Parayaki, then Dr. Mavoya. Chair, thank you.
Thanks, DG. I think the one that I will speak to is the question that was asked by the Honorable Chair with regard to the quality of teaching. I think your question was to say, what indicators do we use? So we have developed a tool that we use for observing those classroom lessons, and the tool has got indicators, and key amongst them is the issue of content knowledge. That's one of the things that we use as an indicator. The confidence with which the teacher can be able to deliver on content. We're also looking at the appropriate use of methodologies for delivering that content. We also look at how the teacher interacts with the learners and how the learners also experience the lesson. So those are some of the indicators that we use. But what we also do, we corroborate whatever information that we got with the post. I think we spoke about the pre and post tests that are written by learners. Learners normally, when they get to these classes, we test them so that we are able to compare their performance before and after the lesson. So normally we also use that as well. So that can also inform the quality of teaching that we are talking about. And on the issue of the PELS, the fact that 78% of our learners cannot read full meaning, especially in home languages. As DG has indicated, we have developed an integrated sector plan that will guide us going forward. And we have also adopted, I think the minister today and tomorrow will be in KZN, where there is a summit
a district summit. So we are approaching, we want to adopt a district approach to the issue of reading. So we have lifted reading as one of the focus areas that we want district directors to also assist us with. So we are really paying particular attention to reading. In that plan, we've got a number of pillars, but most importantly, we've got the pillar that speaks to the teacher development, because we have noticed that most of our teachers do not have the necessary methodologies to can teach reading for meaning. And we've also noticed that most of our classrooms of or our schools do not have sufficient text material for learners to read. So those are some of the pillars that inform our plan. And as DG has indicated, we'll be more than pleased to come and present the strategy and the plan here for reading. Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable King raised the issue of the Free State. Now, I just need to clarify that when I refer to the other eight, we're talking about the automation of the ceiling. It doesn't mean the Free State doesn't have their exam papers and the writing material, you know, sealed. It's just that it would mean that they're sealed basically in terms of 5, 10s, and 20s. It will be done manually. So when it goes to the school, it's sent with, it's sealed. It's just that we are talking about automation. That's what we're saying. So it's not a security issue. There's other ways of that I see as threats regarding that ceiling when you leave it with the chief invigilator and so forth, depending when they open it and so forth. And the whole idea is that that seal must be broken in the presence of the children before writing. So there isn't any concern in that respect, except to bring Free State on board. But what we are doing is basically automating in different parts, but not the holistic system, right? On the shortage of markers, I think the DG did allude to how we're dealing with, well, on some matters of why markers are not coming. But basically, the criteria that are there is that, one, you have to be teaching matric, and secondly, we've got a criteria that your learners needed to have performed above 60%, 60% and above. And that basically is what would have created, if you want to call a shortage. But in the past, there wasn't that criteria. And that's where now some of the provinces have got their HOD's approval after going through those who fell out to basically deal with it. And then it's also the cross interprovincial cooperation as well. There are others that we spoke about, but we're not going into now as well, and I don't think it will happen, is you could extend the marking period, but we are saying we're not going to allow the marking centers to be open beyond the 14th, or that you'd have the norm time or the time for marking extended, but that also we're not in favor of, in that that would lead to other errors and tiredness. So we're talking about marking being between 8 and 5, and then you stop, you go, and you rest. So provinces have looked at it. We'll probably be informed if there's an issue. And then we'll have to collectively as a national and provincial, but I doubt that we're going to get to that. It's not the first year we've been told this. It's been the last 3 years that are there, and provinces have, it's across the board, provinces have had that, but in terms of the numbers, it's not that serious. They could start marking earlier if they wanted in order as well. So at this stage, nobody has come forward. You raised the issue of the age of the correctional services. They should be in that grouping of the full-time, but because they're such a small, usually we don't present this information at this meeting. When we're resulting, we go into bigger details regarding even the 14 and 15. That table will have a column showing how many of them, actually we'll be talking about those who actually sat and wrote the exam, and not those who registered. Although we could have the column just giving that number, and then we would say how many had actually got their NSC as such. And we could even break it down into the different categories of diploma and the bachelor and so forth. So there's a lot more detail that can be given. And on the second chance, it's a bit more, they are in the part-time, but because there's no indicator on the system to tag them as such a second chance, we usually are basically, we try to give something, but it's not basically every person in the second, and even the colleagues that are the ones in the curriculum unit or working on, with Second Chance, they don't have their own database in that respect. But I think we got ways of how to look at it because of the last exam and the MEOs, but exams have traditional methods of how to report, and it's difficult to change people to give additional information. And I usually start quite early on it, but I've been disappointed many times, especially on the special needs. We've moved from at least 2 slides on special needs, if you see the reports over the last 2 years. The DG knows what I'm talking about. On the documentation, I mean, we refer to ID. Obviously, the foreign learner, the passport counts. We have learners who have passports, but in the majority, our learners are not going to carry passports, South African learners. If their ID is not available, the passport. But the issue here is about imposters. And although the November examination is not plagued by this, we do find that happening in the senior certificate. And we've had those incidents. That's what we try to stamp out. And that involves the South African Police Service and so forth. But that is why you need some form of identification. But most often you can take, because the child has been at school the whole year and the exam is administered at school, the officials, the invigilators that are there should know the children, and that's why we say you don't want to deprive the child and later find out they were entitled to a right. And that also takes me to that question about the unregistered learners. All the learners are basically registered, and there's a closing date, online or whether they get registered by the school and so forth. And these are basically like the voter's roll. That after a particular date, the IC has a cutoff. And if we had to follow that route, you would not be allowed to write. So what happens is that, and the numbers are not that big, but we've taken it as a problem because sometimes when you don't have problems, you want to make problems. Right? So we've taken it because one that we've identified is that Gauteng is basically the biggest culprit. In fact, I did tell my colleagues last week that they taught me that you basically allow these children to write because it's in the interest of the child. But by law, we shouldn't be allowing them. Right? And I've said something else as well, that even the punishment for the irregularity is more serious than people who steal money. You know, we ban children for 2 to 3 years not to write the exam. And that is before they've even started their real life, you know, their adult life as such. So I'm following what was there, but we're saying that basically, it's, we want to allow them and then later we'll deal with it. And there can be errors in terms of the registry by the provincial department and the school. There could have been an omission and so forth. But in Gauteng, we find it's happening almost daily in the exam, when we get the daily reports. And sometimes you can't find that. The errors cannot be happening. That means where was the check-in? They were there almost 9 months to verify that list. And at the end of the day. So there needs to be some form, but that's the unregistered. But it's a small number when you look at the size of the exam. But if you're looking at what you want to achieve, it should not be occurring at the end of the in this process. So I think the happy face is because we've registered the learners, but the unregistered is something that you should actually tell them they can't write. The issue related to the release of the results and the IB and the advantage, there's no real advantage. Learners apply well in advance. Universities have their own in June, and in fact your grade 11 results are already the one that universities are offering you a place. And it's about, their traditional period is prior to the new year. Yeah. We basically schedule it based on the readiness and the fact that we want to make a public announcement with the minister and so forth, and that's why we've delayed. We've even had discussions about the stress that's put on staff across the country in the exam units and the number of health issues that come up and so forth, and whether we should do all this before Christmas. That has an impact for the rest of the school year. So in some countries even, we're talking about going into the second week, and then there was the issue of USAF and the universities. But there's no disadvantage to anybody who has applied. All the university is looking at is to verify that you passed the exam, and most often you've been given provisional registration. and then it's to confirm that, and in fact to just indicate that USAF actually gets the entire database directly from us prior to the release. It'll probably be the Monday or as soon as we've got the approval from Malusi and we've captured everything else, even before the minister announces, they got it. And in fact, I have a question. I don't know what you do with it. In fact, we've also been told that certain times people can see it somewhere on the system, on their side, before we've even announced, and that to me is like a security breach. So we're saying that they do have that for it, and in fact, we wonder sometimes whether they give this entire database. I think it's in New York, but the Americans will never give me data if I ask for South Africans who are studying there. You see, we are very transparent and open to sharing our information. So there's nothing about it. The equality and the real issue is whether, you know, with your results, whether you've probably been denied admission or not, and what happens when you do get to university because you're coming from two different institutions. But as the DG said, we're talking about 10,000 to 12,000 learners. We're talking about 600,000. And if you go, we have a graph that will come again about from 1970, how we have the enrollment and the number of learners writing and passing the exam has changed. So that 12,000, and if you look at, this is my other story, I would say, if you look at the people who are the movers and shakers in South Africa, I don't see that 12,000 shaking much. It's coming from somebody within the 500,000. And they are the movers and shakers in reality who make this country move at the end of the day. There will be a number there that's there. But for us to go forward, it will be this group is where they are, you know, you want your leadership to come from going forward. Right? So, yeah, there's other inequality somewhere else, but it's for another day. The metric results. Yeah, approval for examination bodies also happen at the same time. In fact, that's where we need to say, Malusi, I think Professor Volmik and Dr. Rakamensi would have said that, I think if they're having their press conference now, they will talk about the obsession with the NSC. You'll have a press conference with journalists. They'll announce all the information for all the assessment bodies, including higher education, and people will ask only questions on, journalists will only ask questions on the NSC. And you probably have no interest because you have no family or children in it. But I'm just saying that that's the same thing that comes to the issue of the publication. The publication has changed over the last 2 to 3 years. We used to publish the name. After COSAS had raised the issue, there was issues about suicide. The number, well, one death is too many, right? But we are working with Childline to assist. We do publicize that information, even on the statement of results. The number for Childline is put there if you feel that the results were poor and you need to talk to somebody, here's a number to call. And when we wanted to stop it, you would find that even they'll come here, the South African National Editors Forum. It is a business in a way as well, and it sells newspapers at the time. And from our side, we've analyzed that there's no news in the country in that period. And there is an obsession with the NSC. I don't know. If you don't have children writing, I don't find it interesting. If I wasn't working in it, I'd be looking at sitting on the beach. Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing also, as Dr. Mogoya is saying, on the announcement of results. In fact, yesterday I was talking to one of the colleagues here that the TVET results get delayed. It doesn't come out on the day that in the management plan it comes out. Nobody says anything. You know, I'm just saying. Yeah, we were talking about certification. If we had, I think earlier in the year, in the last administration, the Eastern Cape was delayed with 40,000 certificates. We had to answer why the certificates weren't out. There was some glitch in the printing process or something, but we had to answer on it. But children are still waiting for their FET certificate. Yeah, even now. Right, and you may say that we must go and work in higher education now. So, and also to indicate, I didn't say this when I presented as well, that to the DG we've written to ESCOM, to the CEO to look at blackouts, especially for the papers next week on the IT and the CAT. But we also have reserved days and a backup paper in that respect. But obviously, in a particular area, you could have cables there for something that would avoid, but we've got ways to deal with it. The 23-year-olds and so on, we haven't actually done enough work on it to look at, but there's ways to look at it that they would be enrolled at school. The issue there is that about the age appropriateness of an adult basically being in the classroom with a younger child. And with what we are facing now, it's something that you'd want to avoid at the end of the day, but it's about, again, as the DG says, the repetition that's going forward. The explanation given to me as well of when I asked this last for last year's data was that some were special needs learners, but they cannot count for all of them. It's a small number. The same for the prisons. They're a very small number, and that's why we don't really go into the details regarding those. On budget, yeah, we did look at this earlier. The National Treasury is not involved. The National Treasury I referred to was because they set the CPIX. The inflation, the adjustment. Sometimes it's based on the salary increase of 6 or 7%, but the bulk of the money is spent in provinces by provincial departments. We would pay for our moderators, our examiners, and our panels. And we're not really doing any printing. The printing is done in provinces, and when I tell you what it's going to cost you, we could be more efficient in some of the things, but it will still be a big cost. It's between 2.5 and 3 billion. Just for the grade 12. And the DBU would be about 200 million in that, if I round it off to 3 billion, on the grade 12 examination. And that would be to pay the people who are marking and so forth as well. The benchmarking, well, in this about against other qualifications, well, I'm not the expert on it, but we do get foreign diplomats who bring their children, as well as the learners from SADC and so forth. So there's a point system that HEIs use, and there's been complaints that it's more favorable for the international qualifications than our own learners, because even life orientation is not counted. The same happens with the A-levels and the Cambridge, that if a child had written Cambridge and is a South African child, then they would be given a point scoring based on it. And in fact, in some ways, what we've had, I think Dr. Rakrametsi should have been asked this question yesterday. He gives a very articulate answer about this, and he's passionate about the certificate. And the IAB has given us an article as well that actually we are more, our exams are like, I don't want to say it's unfair to our learners, but the A-levels basically could be easier because they're doing about 4 subjects. And whereas we have to do 6, and you count life orientation would be the 7th. So that's where we're saying it's just that it's a perception, and what anything that's maybe American or European or wherever else seems to be better, except what you do in your own house. So that's what it is until you've gone there and you've seen. So the mechanisms to basically compare the different qualifications and allow you admission is there. In fact, we've had in other instances that through international relations have signed agreements with like Germany and France with scholarships and bursaries for us, and we don't have enough learners taking that up. That would mean that it would be a learner where the NSC would go if they take up those opportunities, because you have those agreements where South African learners can go and study overseas. So where they've gone overseas, there's been some kind of benchmarking to basically place them in that. I think I've covered all the questions, Chair.
Just one point, Chair. Mr. Parakis also said part of the explanation for overage learners could be learners with special education needs. Now, there are two possibilities. For learners with special education needs, some of them could start early and some of them could start late. It's not age appropriateness that matters. It's cognitive readiness for them to get into the system. The Auditor General doesn't understand this. I've tried to explain to them. They don't understand it. But experts in special education would be able to articulate this much better than I do. Thank you, Chair.
We've got follow-ups. Sukar Samashesi. Thank you.
I just want to the DG, thank you very much for the presentation and the hard work that went into it. Yesterday we met with social development, and I took the liberty to highlight the issues that you mentioned around the CD program, specifically when it comes to KZN and Eastern Cape. There could be a correlation with what the NDA is trying to do within communities, because one of the things that we have highlighted in social development is the problems that the NDA has with visibility of their programs as well as impact of their programs. Now, within those communities, it could be a solution for us to run the CD program with the through the NDA. And the competency in terms of facilitation of conflict and community involvement is within social development. So it could be a very good success story to link it. And I've mentioned it to the minister and to the DG. I almost wanted to jump up and down when you started speaking about vocational training, because one of the key things that was highlighted in the Commonwealth a week ago was the need for us in Africa to transform our education system, and that the root cause of youth unemployment throughout Africa is because of our education system, that our children go through education, at the end of it very few of them goes into university, and those that does go to we know the story, I don't need to repeat it, but that we really need a strong drive to transform it. And I really think we need in the sixth administration to take up that, take up the cause of changing the minds of our people in terms of this. And I can just highlight to everyone, I come out of recruitment and human resource development. And the people that used to work at Eskom, SANRAL, all of that, most of those competencies in terms of engineers and technical skills are people who did not finish matric. They've ended off in grade 10. From grade 10, they did technical schools, and they went into apprenticeships into these companies, and they become the engineers that has built our roads and our bridges. And it seems as if we are not getting it, you know, fast enough in order for us to turn it around. And the third thing that I want to highlight as well is around this issue of, you mentioned it earlier, and I think the gap in our secondary education is because most of the skills development or development of human beings, let's say, leaves the teaching profession once they've done a post-grad or a master's, and then they move into corporate. And it is a gap that it creates within the education system, so that most of those kids that my colleague here has highlighted, that 600,000, are not exposed to psychometric assessments, are not exposed to assessments that will take them out of grade 10 into something else, you know, where they develop a competency that takes them into the fourth industrial revolution. So it's that philosophy that I think is missing. And I think what I have become aware of as you presented, again, is the capacity of our education system, actually. You know, you do such a great job of doing this, showing us the stats and all of this. And it's commendable to you. But we need as well in our schooling system to really, first of all, celebrate what we have, and secondly, we need to make sure that where the gaps are, that we fill it up. I just want to say with that. In terms of the bursaries overseas, if I can just ask, we don't know about the bursaries overseas, and most of our constituents doesn't know. So I think there needs to be an awareness campaign around those things. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you again to the DG. I think, you know, what she's alluding to is the fact that, you know, if learners do take advantage of what is the TVET courses, they do have advantage. get advantage or the benefit from the program. The only problem is some do not take advantage of it, and that's my biggest concern, that if they do get the grade 9 certificate, they might actually not see the benefit of going to a TVET college. Just wanted to just bring that in. With regard to the teachers that are not availing themselves, or maybe the fact that we are unable to attract enough teachers to do the marking, will the department at some stage or sooner look at an electronic form of applying as a teacher to be a marker and have a centralized system instead of using it, having it at the moment, with provinces deciding who does? Because to eliminate the possibility of certain people preventing the teachers from going to go and mark for whatever reason. And also, the issue of, we discussed yesterday with Uma Lucy, and they said they're going to discuss it with you, but maybe you can give us clarity on it, is about the issue of business studies. We saw for two consecutive years, in 2017, 2018, a decline in business studies results. And there were many people that, they were very unhappy about that because of course it was some of them were private schools. Is that why you're smiling? The thing is this, in South Africa, blacks are the majority. Even if you're looking at private schools, you'll find many black people that are in debt, even more than white people. I don't know why it's automatically it is thought if you talk about private schools, you're protecting the white people. Even South Africans, Africans are a majority in this country. So even private schools, they'll be the majority. Am I wrong? I don't know. Anyway, that school, they contacted me, and I don't know if they also contacted different schools in Eastern Cape, contacted Honorable King, but their complaints were on the fact that, the learners that had good predicates ended up failing the subject. And also the textbook that they were using was not the textbook that was used in public school and therefore disadvantaged their learners, which means that the teachers that were marking the papers, not all of them had a good understanding of the subject. That's basically what they're saying. So I just would like to have clarity on that. And also there was also the committee, the panel that sits on business studies. Apparently it has changed, the new one came in, but I got an explanation yesterday, but I don't know if it's true, okay? So basically it was they were saying that the panel for the business studies education for the 2019 national certificate examination has been changed, a new one has been established. So just like to have clarity. Why are you smiling, Gigi?
But
that doesn't know to smile.
I try to smile, even if it's difficult.
Always see the bright side, huh?
The e-marking. I'm quite interested in that. Will it mostly entail multiple choice when you do e-marking, because some of the subjects you have to write, like in business studies, most is essay writing. And when you say e-marking, it means that if it's computerized, it might end up being a closed memo. And when memos are closed for matric, you're not too relaxed with, some kids might have a different way of saying something, but it boils down to what you actually wanted from them. So I'm interested in that. And then I'm also in an agreement with Sukers when it comes to vocational education. I really am. I'm very strong on that. But it also then boils down to the grade 9. I think people were misunderstanding the grade 9 certificate completely from my point of view. But the concern would basically be when these learners opt to go the route not of public schooling, how will they be able to afford? Because at most of these TVET colleges, they would have to go and pay.
you know, some of the schools when they go to, and you know, when you leave grade 9, you go to another school. In most of these colleges, you pay. You pay to get your grade 10, 11, and 12. Not public, TVET colleges, when you go over, you pay. You pay in most cases, we know that. Has there any concession been put in place should a learner opt to go that route? Because it will not be like sort of like a special needs school that focus on subjects of whether they work with dance. Thanks.
No, thank you very much. I know that I'm responding to the committee, and thank you very much for the comments made by Honorable King, Honorable Machesi, and Honorable Suker. I nearly just burst into amen when Honorable Suker was speaking there. I then realized that I'm not in my place of worship, especially when she really spoke about vocational education. And I'm so happy that even the comments made by Honorable King almost makes the presentation on GET academic superfluous. I mean GEC, sorry. I think you might have to consider, Chair, that instead of us coming to make that presentation, that the two honorable members do that on behalf of the department. And I'm concerned that I'm becoming redundant as well, because they know so much. Well, what we are going to do next week, we'll give an avalanche of international comparisons and comparability between the GEC that we are proposing and what other countries are doing. Even in SADC, Zimbabwe, next door here, they've got an equivalence of that. They've got one of the best education systems in Africa and compare very well with the world. Their economy is something else than politics, but their education system is one of the best. Honorable King, I agree with you, and I hope you'll help us to get the public to understand. The problem is that at times when we try to explain, people think that we are defending. But what do we then expect when professors, you know, eminent members of civil society lead our society astray, who are supposed to be assisting civil society to understand? Because this thing was also led by them, and you know them. I don't want to mention them to you. Even academics. To some extent, I've lost hope and trust in some of our academics, because in my view, they are best placed to explain this thing and say, in the world, this is how things are done. And what this department is trying to do will work if they do 1, 2, 3. But unfortunately, many of them, except for Professor Mary McCarv and a few others who tried really to explain to the nation about the issue of the GEC. So the issue of learners who opt for vocational education, Honorable King, there are 55 colleges, I think, 260 campuses. They are public institutions. There are a few who are independent, but the 55 I know that they are, because many of them were established when I was still in the province. They were part of the provincial system. NEFSAS actually is supposed to insulate these learners there. And one day we must talk about maybe a joint committee between us and DHET. Talk about why is it that bright learners from our schooling, when they get to university, they don't cope. Some of the things Sizwe Masana shared with us, who was once the chair of NESFAS, NSFAS, as well as the acting CEO. He said, here is a logical occurrence. At schooling level, you get books for free, you get food, you get transport free, you get tuition fee. You go to university, you don't get that. And how do you expect them, or you go to TVET, you don't get all of that package. And suddenly, you are well off. You should be able to deal with all these challenges that were taken away from you at school. Close to 80% of our schools don't charge school fees. 9.7 million learners benefit from, you know, pro-poor policies of government. Out of 12 million, 9.7. So, I mean, one day we need to talk about that. So the e-marking, and by the way, in 2015 when we visited Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe was doing e-marking in mathematics, in English. English, Honorable King, and remember that your own gadget phone, when you write on it, gets used to even your handwriting. So these things are going to happen fairly easily with sophisticated programs that are there. I mean, we'll be able to mark electronically, and not only choice multiple questions, but the computer will be able to read all handwriting and so on in not so distant future. As I've said, in Zimbabwe, English is one of those that are done through e-marking. Math, I've forgotten, I think there are about three or four that they are doing e-marking already in. And Dr. Polia and others, I think, also visited to go and see what they are doing. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. Kenya as well, I think they've piloted on a few subjects on e-marking. So, Honorable Machesi, well, to some extent I agree with you. You know, it's an issue of a paradigm shift. We're socialized around blue-collar work that our education system has been preparing us for, that you know, you go to an institution so that when you get out of there, you afford a suit and a tie. If you wear a coat, then it means you are not educated enough. Although you could be doing even a better job than somebody who's wearing a tie and a suit like myself, a plumber, an electrician, you know, etc. and etc. who, as I've already said, in other countries are paid more than a medical doctor. So that paradigm shift has not happened. TVET colleges, and this is my own view, are not institutions of choice as yet. They are institutions of last resort. Institutions of last resort. And until we have that, in fact, the three-stream model and the general education certificate, working with DHET, we're saying what you are coming up with, that's why the minister talked about the architecture of the education system, how we have put together the system to prepare human resources for this country. And we believe the three stream has got implications for even the current operation of TVET. In the past, we used to have technicons. Technicons used to offer higher certificates and diplomas. The current policy of TVET allowed them to move into that space, to some extent even work with universities and even offer degrees. Now, our view is that if our technical high schools are ready, if our schools of skills are ready, TVET colleges must get out of the schooling space and go into post-schooling. You have spare capacity of 260 sites that can absorb young people of this country who would have finished grade 12 to higher certificate or a diploma, not NCV. It's a waste of time, because NCV is an equivalent of your grade 12. So these are the changes that you are coming up with. I hope this country knew that this These are things that the minister is coming up with. The issue of Mr. Paraki, maybe we'll talk to attracting teachers for marking, Honorable Machesi. You're saying electronic system for selecting markers. Because these are national exams, we are even reviewing the selection of markers. Selection of markers is going to change. It will change, it's going to change. There's a package that they have put together. This national senior certificate is a national qualification. And these are national exams. And increasingly, they are going to take that form. At some point, we would even be talking about an examination council. We don't know what implications would come out for other assessment bodies. You might actually have one examination council for the country. That might happen. So, business studies, you know, from a factual point of view, because we've received these concerns and complaints, which were investigated by Umalusi and us. You see, when things have gone wrong, people will look for throwing as much mud as possible. Because you are public representatives, they'll come to you and say the panel changed, this and that happened, and so on. And some of the challenges, Honorable Machesi, is that our question papers are no longer as predictable as they used to be. They are no longer as predictable as they used to be. And it's not only business studies. And maybe things might get better because from, is it next year? Accounting and business studies are going to be split into two papers. Maybe things will get slightly better. But we also know that when economics was split into two papers, in fact, the performance went down. So it's not a given that when you split those papers, things will get better. But I'm sure you know that in IEB, they've long been split. They've been writing two papers and not one. And it goes back to what Mr. Paraki said. People who think that IEB is of a higher standard than NSC, but at any rate, my response all the time is that it's just an examination body. Quality assuring body is one, is Umalusi, or quality assurance body is Umalusi. Thank you very much, Honorable Suker. I will pursue the issue of the NDA. Fortunately, I'm the co-chair of the social cluster, so I'll use that advantage also to say, are there projects that we can run together as a cluster? So thank you very much for the advice. Bursaries overseas, bursaries are mainly issued by DHET. We do sometimes get countries like China or India who would say to us, we've got spaces for so many learners, and then we communicate with provinces. Maybe we need to start considering communicating through public means, not just existing departments. So I take your advice on that, Mr. Paraki.
I think I'm just going to answer on the business studies. The panel wasn't changed by us because of the performance. It was after the question was asked yesterday, I requested the information. Three members of the panel resigned. It's true attrition, basically. And I think there was a comprehensive investigation. And in fact, it's interesting that it's only business studies that we had this kind of complaint. It could be made for any other subject as well. But initially it started off that the paper was set using the Mind the Gap, but when the analysis was done, it didn't show that it was a paper only for the learners who don't have, who received the Mind the Gap, that the Mind the Gap should be given to everybody. But that wasn't the intention of Mind the Gap. It was where the resource material of textbooks is not available. And then the papers were remarked, not just for this school, all those who complained basically at our cost. And usually the rest of the people who were unhappy with their marks or whatever, they made the normal application for remarks as well. And So there was nothing, it reminds me of what's in the news now about the doctors who want to be surgeons. And only 15% are being passed. And they all, yeah, they were also sent for remarking as well. And nothing changed. You know what I'm saying? There could have been changes as well, but it wasn't to show that the marking by those who were said to be marking were that they were not, sometimes we are told that previously markers were drunk on duty and so forth. So that doesn't come out there as well. And, you know, that's, the report is there, and Malusi as well had approved the paper. You know, at the end of the day, there would have been this thing, but we would not have one paper. You can have a situation like that, but the paper wasn't based on any particular textbook as well. Because at the beginning of the year, we issue exam guidelines. It says that this year's paper, for all the subjects, each one gets their own exam guideline, so that teachers will be told, you know, these are the areas that are going to be covered. But that exam guideline doesn't cover, the paper doesn't cover everything. It's to basically, as the DG said earlier, some subjects the syllabus is too vast. It's to assist the teachers at school, so they look at that. So some of the schools, sometimes even your public schools, would buy a textbook that maybe wouldn't suit the curriculum because there's something, maybe there's a kickback or something on the textbook. You know, where we are not, it's a provincial department's competency to buy textbooks, and not the workbooks is a DBE. So there's various factors in it that we looked at, but the one that was clear is that, which I did indicate to you yesterday after the meeting, is that the results have been dropping. In the previous years, Umlusi gave us an upward adjustment, so we did not see it. And now when they refuse to give us the upward adjustment, you feel the pain. In 2009, we had a very bad physical science paper. And in fact, even Umlusi did the maximum adjustment. You still had children who had basically could have got this, would believe they got distinctions, who did not get it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the process. There isn't anything untoward that has been done that at the end of the day. It's just in this paper, you could make an argument for any paper if you want to follow that route for this one. And I think on the e-marking, if it's a multiple choice question, then the computer will do the work. It's a programming matter. But the one that Gauteng has been basically, you know, that they've set up at the moment, they do have the thing for written answers as such. And what the big change will be is how we set the paper. When I say set the paper, not necessarily the questions, is how we program for now we're programming it, we're looking at the printing of it. For there, it will be the programming matter so that when the marking happens, it basically all fits together in one shot. And we had discussions about security, other people using your codes and so forth. So there's many things, and it's on the way. But the other is we cannot enter into the space and find that we can't result learners. Or we have a problem with how the marking was done, and then there are challenges as well. Then we'll also have to change our regulations to incorporate the new technologies as well. So that will be on its way. I think the next 24 months will be the one to watch.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much, DJ, and your team. I think it was worth it actually that we had this presentation. All the best, DJ, with the work that we are going to embark on in making sure that we've got matriculants of. Next year, when the minister announces next year, we are hopeful. For goodness, we will be there. I think all of us, we've got the date. We will be there. We are going to attend. And thank you very much. Just members, please, when they have just left, we need to adopt manners, and then we will be done.
Okay.